This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug until midday on Joy. SMS 0427 Joy 949. Freshly dug on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Freshly Dug on Joy 94.9. And this hour, we're digging deeper with the man I suppose I should call the serial volunteer. He's the man who's volunteered for virtually every organisation going in Melbourne. Someone everyone's heard of and I think everyone's seen around the place. That's Colin Kreiser. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. And it's good to see you up and about again after your recent surgery.
Thank you.
Which we will talk about a little bit later on.
Okay.
I just want to go right back to the beginning of things. You're thoroughly Melburnian, aren't you?
I was born and raised in Melbourne. Yes, it's my home. I love it.
never been tempted to go anywhere else?
No. I don't think there's anywhere else in the world I'd rather live.
Okay. Whereabouts in Melbourne were you born?
Oh, I was born in Malvern, I think, but raised in Carnegie.
Uh-huh.
And which is where I'm back. I've sort of come back to my roots.
You haven't moved very far then?
I haven't, no. I've moved away, but come back.
What was your family like? Were you an only child?
Oh, no. There's two of us. I have an older brother, and you know, we had the brick veneer house in the suburbs, and mum and dad worked very hard, and you know, they came out from Europe at the time of the Second World War and mm-hmm. settled in Australia and made a life for themselves. And my brother and I were both born in Melbourne and educated here, and the rest is history, really. My brother ended up getting married and having children.
And you didn't.
And I didn't. No, I was the black sheep in the family.
So, living at home with your parents and that, I mean, there's no point in talking about early childhood and that, but when did you first start to sort of get an inkling that you might be gay?
Oh, look,
that you might be different?
I actually knew that I was different from a very early age. It's very interesting. I can't put an age on it, but, you know, I knew something was wrong. And also, you know, things are different because when you're in school and you're in primary school and people start calling you names mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you know that, well, there's something different about me, and you're attracted to your own gender. And I was attracted to male teachers and other male students.
So what sort of age were you talking about?
I'm talking here? Primary school age, you know, grade 3, 4, 5. Uh-huh. So very young.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
young. I knew that there was something different. I didn't know what it was called, but it was just not quite right at the time.
You said there was a certain amount of name-calling and so forth.
Yes, I mean, you know, I can't even remember specific names, but I just remember, you know, being in that name-calling period where, you know, boys would be nasty at school and they would pick you out and call you a sissy and that type of thing. And that sort of, yeah, that remains in my mind.
So did that drive you into yourself? Did that make you a solitary sort of child? Or?
No, I seemed to have friends. I had friends in school, and I was, you know, I had friends in the neighbourhood. So I wouldn't say I was a solitary child at all. And also, you know, I had a lot of friends at home, like family friends and cousins and lots of people my age to hang around with. So no, not at all. But I do remember, you know, at a very early age, I was more tempted to play with Barbie dolls than anything else, and so that was a bit of a worry. They weren't my Barbie dolls. I'd always play with someone else's.
Yeah, but you didn't feel ostracized or cut out or anything like that?
Not particularly, no. Not at that age, because I didn't know what it was.
Mm.
I just knew that I was different and I was attracted to my own gender.
When did you start to be able to put a label on it then?
It wasn't until that I was in the workforce and still very young, around 17, 18, and then I actually met other gay people at that age.
And a little switch went on in your head and thought,
yeah, that's what I am.
Yeah.
This is what I am. I'm like you guys, and yeah. and I'm also gay, although we didn't call it gay in those days. But
No, you called it camp,
didn't you? Yeah, you were very camp. You were very camp. Sounds like something you do in the bush with a tent. that you were.
Yes, that was the particular Australian phrase I remember at the time, because it used to amuse us no end in England.
Did it? Be,
oh, they call themselves camp.
But, camp.
And, you know, they're Australians. They're supposed to be dead butch. You know. It was a little difficult to understand.
Well, we like the outdoors and camping and things like that, so I guess I don't know where it came from, but you were camp in those days.
As camp as a row of tents, as they say.
Yes, as camp as a row of tents. Look, people in those days, like Freddie Asmussen, the window dresser at Meyer, he would be camp. Mm. He would never be gay,
yes,
but he would be camp.
And you worked at Meyer, didn't
I did
you?
Work at Meyer, yes, I did. I worked in sales at Meyer, and that's where I met my first real gay friends.
Yes.
And that's...
Can you remember who that was?
It was... I had a friend in a department next to mine. They were selling ties.
Yes.
And we became best friends, and I started hanging out with his friends, and might I say that person actually now lives successfully as a woman full-time and had the full gender change.
Really?
Yes. Yes, quite amazing times we went through then. But that's when I discovered that I was gay, and that's when I came out to my parents at that time when I was working in Meyer.
Oh, and how did that go?
Not very well. Not very well. It was actually...
Pretty traditional parents.
Very traditional Jewish family, not overly orthodox, but not very liberal either. And let me just say, it was like they had just lost their son, and they were in mourning.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yes. It was quite serious at the time. And they shipped me off to a psychiatrist to see what was wrong.
Oh, yes. Been there, done that.
And Dr. Ainsley Mears, I can name him because he's now deceased.
Yeah.
And he put his hand on my knee and said, there, there, everything will be okay. Let's just send you off to Sydney. You need to get away from Melbourne.
I take it he wasn't trying to cure you then.
You just made it worse. Or better, I should say. No, I did go and live in Sydney as a teenager.
Yeah.
And I boarded in Sydney and I met more gay friends.
Well, you would, wouldn't you?
I did.
I find that astonishing, you know. Oh, you're gay. Well, you know, let's send you to Sydney and see what happens.
Well, the idea was take you away from the influences of Melbourne and the people that you're hanging out with now, because they're obviously...
But he mustn't have known much about Sydney.
Didn't know much about Sydney at the time. So that happened. I stayed in Sydney for a few months and then I came home and resumed my life in Melbourne.
Well, let's take a little pause there and listen to your first choice of music.
Yes.
From Me to You by the Beatles.
Well, yes, nothing to do with the title of the track. It's more to do with the Beatles and the era, because it's from 1963, and that's a time when music started to have a great influence over me. And my brother, who was older than me, would have these records and play them. So consequently, I would be liking a lot of the music that he liked, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I grew up on this type of music, and I still love it to this very day.
Oh, well.
So here's the Beatles.
Till midday, Freshly Dug on Joy 94.9.
This is Freshly Dug. Doug Pollard here, and I'm talking this hour with Colin Kreiser. Now, Colin, we just got you safely away from all those evil gay influences in Melbourne.
Yes.
And away to Sydney.
Yes.
As a teenager.
As a teenager,
this cure obviously didn't work.
No, it didn't work. Look, when you're gay, and that's it. Nothing is going to change that. Nothing at all. But I got to make some friends in Sydney, and I still have those friends. I'm talking when I was 17. I still have those friends to this very day.
Which is valuable.
It's
very
quite amazing.
Valuable. I mean, that's quite a number of years now.
It's quite a number. Well, I've just turned 54, so it's quite a number of years.
Now, you'd already come out. You'd got that little bit over and done with.
That's right.
But how did you come into contact with gay politics and gay activism? Because one of the things you're very well known for around town is you're involved or have been involved at various times with God knows how many gay organisations. How did that start?
Yeah, I tend not to call it maybe gay politics, but gay community. I get involved in the gay community. And how that happened was not until very late in life that I actually got involved, because I moved into Elstonwick at the time. I received a phone call from a young lady who was a volunteer at the Victorian AIDS Council. Now, how she found me, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But she rang me up and said, look, you've got to remember, this is in the height of the AIDS epidemic. And she said, look, we know you've just moved into the area. Would you like to come and join the Victorian AIDS Council and be part of our support group in that particular area of Melbourne, which was called Inner South? Mm-hmm. And I said, sure, why not? So I, cutting a long story short, I did join Inner South and the Victorian AIDS Council and started to do support work for people living with HIV and AIDS. And that was the start of it. And it was from there that it just branched out, and I got to know more and more people and learnt more about other organisations and became involved in them.
Well, so this is quite a kind of a leap away in time.
Oh, big! This is a big gap in time.
So what were you doing in between times?
More just socialising with just some friends, but not actually being part of the community or being part of any organisations, because, I mean, gay organisations as we know them weren't around in abundance in those days.
No.
There wasn't very much at all. And so I was just going out, socialising to clubs and pubs, etc.
So really what got you pulled into the community organisations was, in fact, the AIDS crisis.
It was.
I know what it was like when that suddenly came along. Can you give us a sense of what it was like for you when AIDS suddenly reared its head?
It was quite a surreal time, because all of a sudden a lot of your friends were becoming sick, and there were the things like the Grim Reaper campaign and lots of other campaigns, and there were funerals left, right and centre around you, and people were dropping like flies, and it was very scary. It was just quite an amazing time to go through, and trying to live with all that and the loss of all of so many people, so many friends. It's something that a lot of the young people today just don't understand. They don't understand what we went through.
No, and I think maybe that plays into the way that people have got a wee bit complacent, perhaps, about
possibly
the whole AIDS thing now, because they didn't see... Because in the early days, of course, there was no cure.
Well, no, there was no...
There was no treatment.
There was no treatment.
Period.
Or the treatments they had didn't always work. And fortunately, some of those boys from back then are still with us today.
Yes.
And doing really, really well. But we're talking about a small percentage, and a lot of them passed away.
Yeah.
From complications,
yeah,
which they just couldn't keep under control. And today they can, which is fantastic. But it's still not an invitation to go out and have unsafe sex.
No.
I wouldn't recommend that to anyone.
No.
No. And I must add that at the time of, or pre-AIDS, I was really playing Russian roulette then at that time, like a lot of people. And there was no such thing as using condoms.
Putting my hand up here, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was no such... We never even thought about using a condom in those days. And this was leading up to the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
And it was basically Russian roulette without even knowing that you were playing it.
Yes, and when it first came along, of course, nobody knew what it was,
no,
or how
knew
you
what
caught it,
was.
it or anything.
Oh, I mean, look, people were saying you catch it by sitting on the same toilet seat as someone who'd been there. I mean, there were so many things flying around, and we didn't know what to believe. But anyhow, we're a bit more sensible about it now.
So talk about your time at the VAC. What did you actually do in these support groups?
In the support group, we were allocated an area of Melbourne. In this case, it was the Inner South area, which is Bayside and surrounds. Mm-hmm. And we would have clients to look after. So these were, young guys that were not well, and they seriously were not well at the time. And a lot of them had lost their jobs and had to stay home, and we would drive them to doctor's appointments and do their shopping for them, or just go to their homes and sit with them and have a cup of tea and have a chat and keep them company, run errands for them, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And that was quite a busy time back then, because a lot of the guys were quite ill. Whereas today, from what I understand, the whole support side of VAC has changed, and it's not as busy as it was. It's still there, and they are providing services for clients, but in those days it was frantic. it was frantic.
Yeah, because people did get very sick very quickly.
They did, and they needed help. Mm. They needed help. And there were teams and teams of volunteers who would just be there ready to get on board, form care teams around a client, and you'd have a care team leader. And I was a leader of a care team. And you do your job. You just go out and do it and help these guys that needed help. And
at the same time as holding down a full-time job.
Oh, yeah. Well, generally, all of us, most of us worked, had full-time jobs. You'd have retired people who could do a lot of the driving during the day and take them to doctor's appointments, etc. But it was a very busy time and a time when a lot of the care teams were formed and then they would disband because your client passed away.
Yeah.
And then you'd start up another care team.
Was that hard to handle when you lost a client?
To be quite honest, I only had the one care team. I had one client and I was with him when he died in Fairfield Hospital. I sat by the bed as he was taking his last breath. I didn't have a care team after that, but I remained in the support group. Was it hard to handle? Yeah, at the time it was emotionally, it was very draining because it was not only, you know, the death of your client, you went through this with their family, you went to the funeral, you knew all their friends, and it was like losing a friend. So it was very difficult at the time.
Yeah.
But it made you, you know, it was a learning experience, and it was all, you learned from it. It was all part of life. Unfortunately, you know,
not a very nice part of life,
but we just had to get on with our job, and that's what we were there for.
Well, let's lighten the mood a little.
Yes, let's do that.
After that, Sergio Mendes and Brazil's 66.
Yes,
we're Look of Love.
Still in the 60s.
How terribly middle of the road of you.
It is very middle of the road, but see, my taste in music is so varied. It is so, so varied that it's unbelievable, and I really love this type of music. I really do.
You're listening to Digging Deeper on Freshly Dug, Joy 94.9. My name's Doug Pollard, and my guest today is Colin Kreiser. Now, Colin.
Yes, Doug.
After your experience with the VAC, that seems to have set you off on a path of basically volunteering at almost every community organization in the city.
I don't know how that happened. It just, I don't know. I got my finger into all sorts of organizations, and not necessarily on committee level, but helping out wherever I could, especially with their events and fundraisers, because I had this, and I don't know, this interest in putting together events at the time, and helped out in that regard.
Well, let's run through some of these organizations, just a quick look at some of who they are.
Yes.
A lot of people nowadays will not know who, for example, the Boilers.
That's right, and the Boilers still exist. It's probably the oldest gay organisation in Melbourne, and with members in their 70s and 80s now. And it was a social group, and they used to raise a lot of funds for charity as well.
And what did you do for them?
I did technical work for them, because they would put on big balls and shows and whatever, and when it came to lighting and sound and things like that, I'd always help them every year for their big fundraisers.
Now, where did you learn how to do that?
Picked it up. I just picked it up. I don't know. It's just like you, as a child, I would always be tinkering with sound equipment and I'd pull the home stereo to pieces and put it back together again. And then I ended up in, one of my jobs was working at for J.C. Williamson's, the theatre people, and I worked in the sound department and so took that experience there. And I don't know. It's just one of those things I've always tinkered with.
You're a typical Aussie man with a shed.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Except you're a gay one.
Something to that effect, yeah. So I use that experience and knowledge to help out in those areas needed in the community.
Well, that's obviously come in handy for things like the Rainbow Awards, the Fantasy Ball.
Fantasy Balls, which are fantastic days.
And of course here.
And at Joy as well, because I became involved in Joy before it even went to air on their very first day. I was part of Joy.
Yes, you have a very low membership number, I noticed.
Yeah, it is very low.
I'm something like 5,000 and something. I think you're about 50-something.
I'm 48.
48. So you were very quick through the door.
I was, yes. I paid my membership very fast.
the fantasy balls. I wasn't around when they were happening.
They were fantastic days. Yeah, well, the fantasy balls, there's nothing like it anymore in Melbourne anyhow. They might do something in Sydney, but not in Melbourne. And they were huge costume balls. And the whole purpose was to have this fantastic night out and really enjoy yourself and raise money as well for a worthy charity. Put together by a group of volunteers, no paid staff whatsoever. And this went on for many years. It was an institution. You always had to go to the fantasy ball.
And of course, the Rainbow Awards in one form or another.
Oh, that's right. They were running together.
A long, long time.
Yes, for many years. Rainbow Awards were always almost as big as the fantasy ball.
Mm. It's sad that that's gone now.
It has. I think it's gone. I think they've gone forever. We'll see. You never know.
Why do you think it is that we don't do those things anymore?
I think basically it's because of the cost of putting them on. And it is very hard to get sponsorship these days now for things like, for events like that. And I think that's what saw the end of the Rainbow Awards and fantasy balls.
It is very sad that that happened. Then, of course, there's all the other AIDS-related charities you've been involved in, but the one that everybody knows about,
is
the quilt.
The AIDS Memorial Quilt, which I've been a part of for many years. I just fell into that. I helped out with their sound one year in the old city square, which I don't know if you remember, the very old city square, where they'd get about 10,000 people there, each holding candles for an AIDS Memorial vigil. And I was just a volunteer there one year, helping out with the audio, and the next thing you know, I'm on the committee. What happened there?
I think you say yes too easily.
I think I'm yes. I'm just a girl who can't say no. Something like that. And so I'm still with the AIDS Quilt, not on the committee, just as a member these days. Mm-hmm. In fact, we've got our AGM coming up very soon.
Yeah, and also Positive Living Centre.
Yes, always helping
out. With HIV/AIDS.
Yes, helped out with all those organisations. If they need me, I'm there. It's just a pleasure to work with them because they're all such lovely people to work with and I tell you there's the offshoot of all that is that you get to meet such wonderful people and you get to socialise with some amazing people.
I think this is something that perhaps the younger generation are missing out on in some respects because it's always difficult to get people to volunteer.
Yes.
People don't... And also there's an enormous churn of volunteers. People don't stay volunteering for very long people come and people go.
That's right. And there's nothing wrong with that as well.
There's nothing wrong with it, but I think one thing that people forget about the whole volunteering experience is it's not just about doing something for other people. It also does something for you.
You get something back, which is really good. I mean, it does take up your time, and it does involve a bit of elbow grease and a bit of work sometimes, but you get it back. You get some really good times back. You get some good friends back.
I think there you've put your finger on the point. You actually make friends.
You do.
And you make friends who are worth having.
That's right.
By and large, because...
You've got something in common.
Yeah, because if you're just meeting people in bars and places like that, it's very trivial, it's very superficial, it's really hard to get to know somebody when you have to shout at them over loud music all
that's
the
right
time. Or wake up next to them drunk, and that's the only way you get to know them.
Well, Doug, but, all right.
And I've done enough of that in my time. When you're working alongside somebody, when you really do get to know them, and you really do make some wonderful friends.
That's very true.
And I would very much urge any people out there who've thought, oh, boring. You know, somebody once said to me, oh, why should I go to Joy? It's full of old men. Well, some of us old men have some interesting things to tell you and to teach you, dear. And I'm not talking about in bed.
And it's not full of old men, I can assure you. I'm just looking around the office now.
It certainly is not.
But it is a great alternative to going to the clubs, and there's nothing wrong with the nightclubs and the bars. I did all that, and sometimes I still do, but there are other ways to meet people.
Yeah, and at the same time, you can do a bit of good for yourself
and
others.
And you learn something on the way too. You learn new experiences, new skills.
Well, you said you picked your skills up along the way.
I did.
Just all the technical stuff. Yeah. I mean, when I came to Joy, I knew nothing about radio. Absolutely zilch. You know, but the nice thing about being a community radio station is they give you the time to fail, so to speak.
They do, yes.
And you can learn and grow.
And they teach you for free as well, so. Yeah.
Which cannot be bad.
That's right.
In my book, it cannot be bad at all. Okay, well, you've got a lot of music you want to get through.
I've picked out a few tracks.
And this one is a very long track. I hope it's not living up to its title.
No, it's not. Look, I picked it because it wasn't one of their up-tempo tracks, and it still has a lot of energy in it. And it's from their new album, which is absolutely amazing. It's the last CD that I bought. But we're talking about the Pet Shop Boys, and I just absolutely adore their music.
And the title of the track is?
Being Boring.
Thank you, London.
You're listening to Freshly Dug on Joy 94.9. As always, this hour we're digging deeper with a special guest. And my special guest this morning is Colin Kreisar.
Yes, I didn't know I was that special, but never mind.
Everyone,
just ordinary Colin.
Everyone who sits over there is special.
All right.
Everyone who sits over there is special.
You.
Now, you used to sit here, where I'm sitting, flying the Boeing kind of thing, with a
yes.
program called Disco the Run. How long did you do that for?
I don't know, many years, on and off. We had some breaks, but many years from almost the very beginning of when Joy started, all 16 years ago. And Saturday night, it would be time to get ready to go out, and you'd be listening to Disco on the Run and all those 70s, 80s, 90s disco tracks, which I loved.
You must have a massive collection.
I have got I've got all my vinyl, all the 12-inch vinyl records from the late 70s, early 80s. I've still got every single one of them.
And you had a co-presenter too.
I did Steve Hall, and who, you know, a good friend of mine, and we met as volunteers on Joy, and now we're very good friends. Steve and I would present Disco on the Run for many, many years. But before Steve, it was Mark Drummond. Now, you wouldn't remember Mark, but
no.
Mark was one of the boys that started off Joy. He was on that first committee that started off Joy. And Mark and I would present a show. It wasn't called Disco on the Run in those days. I can't remember what it was called, but it was a disco theme.
Now, you haven't been on air for a while, have you?
No, not for a couple of years now. No, we stopped our season and we just didn't return. And I tell you, I got used to not coming in on a Saturday night.
Yeah, you got your Saturday nights back for yourself.
I have. I love it.
You're not tempted to come back at all?
Look, anything's possible.
Or possibly to do something different if you came back.
I still am a very much part of Joy, and I'd like to keep my finger in the pie, so to speak, and I usually help out with events and outside broadcasts. So I'm still there. But not on air.
But music is obviously very important to you.
Love it. Love music. All sorts of music.
When you say all sorts, do you range as far as classical? And
classical, country and western.
Country and western.
Oh, yes.
Good
love
Lord.
It.
Good Lord.
Yes.
I wouldn't have thought you would have country and western.
No, no. Jazz. Burton. Jazz. Soundtracks. Musical soundtracks. Pop. Rock. Almost anything. I won't go as far as to say AC/DC, but, you know, some classic bands out there that I grew up with. And, yeah, I love music.
Is the music... Do you go to live music things in Melbourne still?
No, I don't. Actually, funny enough, I very rarely go to a live concert. I don't know why that is. I've been to a couple, but I don't go to very many at all. I tend to listen to the radio a lot or have a CD on. Always have something going at home, whether it's the radio or a CD.
No, I only went to a few concerts and was kind of disappointed it didn't sound like it did on the album.
On the album.
So I kind of gave up on that quite a long time ago.
Not a very big concert fan. I mean, I've been to some of the major, concerts like Madonna's concert, etc. But I don't normally go to a concert, which is quite odd, I guess, for a music lover. That's the way it is.
But obviously, you've heard an awful lot of disco.
I love disco. Love disco music especially from the 70s.
Yeah.
Late 70s, early 80s. That was the real disco era.
Yeah. And you've chosen a track from that era.
Most definitely from a group called Earth, Wind and Fire. And it's just one of my favorite all-time floor fillers. And here it is.
You're listening to Freshly Dug on Joy 94.9. My name's Doug Pollard, and we're almost finished talking to Colin Kreisar today. But before we finish up, there's one last thing we really need to talk about. You've only just gone back to work.
I have.
After a very serious heart operation.
That's right. I was off work for, well, it was only two and a half months. I guess it's a long time in anyone's year.
But for such a serious piece of surgery, it's doesn't sound like long, does it?
No.
What work do you do?
I work for the Department of Justice. I've been there about 21 years now. And working
21 years?
Yeah, 20, just gone. I don't know where it went. 21 years.
In one job?
Same job. Love it, because I enjoy my work.
People don't do that, Colin.
I know they don't. It's very rare. It is very rare these days. But most of the people in my department have been there that amount of time or longer, because we really enjoy our work and we all get on very well. And it's like one big happy family.
What sort of thing do you do?
It's digital audio recording of criminal courts. Mm. So we actually provide the courts with the transcript at the end of the day of what's gone on. What's being said in the courtroom.
Oh, now we know where you picked up some of your technical expertise.
Well, let's just say it helps.
Okay, but, now when this problem with your heart came along, that must have been like a bolt from the blue.
It was, yeah, at first it wasn't, because, you know, I had a general men's checkup in 2008, and they said, oh, you've got a problem with your heart, it'll be okay, we'll just keep an eye on it, nothing to worry about, and if anything goes wrong, we can probably medicate it and you'll be fine. So I thought, okay, no problem. And, you know, a few ECGs later, and they said, look, it's getting worse, you really need to have an open heart operation to fix this, and we need to set a date. And I'm going, okay. This is really happening. This wasn't part of my life plan. You know, I wasn't expecting this.
No, and that's pretty major surgery, isn't it?
It is, actually. Fortunately, I had it done today, in this day and age, and not back in the 50s when they were experimenting with open heart surgery.
Yeah.
Because in the mid 50s it was all experimental and most of the patients died.
Like today, with transplants and things. The first few.
That's right. Mm. And I'm very lucky, because it's an operation which is very common. And it's a very successful operation.
That's a reassuring thing they always tell you, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a really common operation.
We
don't lose many nowadays.
Well, it's very few. Look, you know, for something to go wrong, you have to have really an underlying illness there, you know, something wrong with you. So I was very lucky. I mean, I was quite healthy. You know, don't smoke, don't drink, and fairly slim and all that sort of stuff. So I was quite healthy to start with. So the chances of something going wrong would be quite minute, and nothing went wrong. The operation was very successful. It was very invasive surgery. That was a bit hard to come to terms with. I couldn't look at the scar for quite some time afterwards when I was in hospital. I didn't want to look at it.
No, you've got this big zipper down the
front.
I've
got a huge zipper down the front of my chest, and which is slowly fading. It's, you know, it's getting there. It'll take a while, but I'll live with it. I can live with it. And
and open-heart surgery means they actually open you up and operate on your heart.
On your heart. They open you wide open, and then they open your heart open, and you're on a heart-lung machine. The heart's not operating at the time. They repair the heart, do what they have to do. In my case, I had a valve put in, a new valve, and they sew it all up and sew you together. And I won't say how they sew you together, but I know how they do it now. And you heal. And
I thought they just used a staple gun nowadays.
They use twist ties. They actually use twist ties to put you back together again. Mm-hmm. And a special kind of surgical twist tie, not the ones that wrap around the bread plastic bag.
No, more like the ones they use to hold fencing wire.
That's right. It is, actually. It's something like that, but it's stainless steel and it stays there forever. And you heal, and it all happens so fast. And within a couple of days of having this open heart surgery and having this huge invasive surgery, you're up on your feet and you are walking around the ward. You are eating normally. You are doing everything basically normally, but slower.
Yeah.
Until you build up your strength. And before you know it, you're home. And you're doing normal things.
Now, how long ago is it you had the surgery?
28th of January. And I'm back at work now.
And you're back at work.
Yes.
And you feel fine.
Feel fine.
You know, and you've got your voice back too, because that was a bit of a problem for a while.
Yeah, the voice went for quite some time, and that was as a result of the breathing tube. It really played havoc with my vocal cords, but it's back and everything's quite normal. I'm just now on medication for the rest of my life, which is, you know, I mean, a lot of people are, and I just need to look after myself, and everything will be fine. But that's easily said than done. But it's quite a life-changing operation, because to have that such invasive surgery, it can be quite traumatic. And
has it changed your outlook on life and death? And
it
so
has.
Forth?
It has, to a point, on life and death. Yeah. Well, I guess when you reach this age, you start to think about it more, regardless. But no, look, I make a point of enjoying myself and enjoying life and not putting too many things off. So when it comes to buying something, and you think, well, look, if I don't buy it now, what's the point? Because I may not be around to buy it later. So you enjoy yourself more. I guess, within reason.
Well, within reason, yes.
Yeah.
As my grandmother used to say, everything in moderation, including moderation.
Well, that's right, and that is the key to life. You do everything in moderation, and you shouldn't go wrong.
Well, we hope to have you around for a great deal longer, Colin.
Thank you. I hope to be around for a long time.
as I'm sure does every gay organisation in Melbourne.
Well, look, you know.
What would we do without you?
The sky would not fall in, I assure you.
It may not fall in, but it certainly wouldn't be the same.
That's right. And who would do the sound when you're up on the stage at Fed Square?
Well, yeah. Actually,
doing those Equal Love rallies.
Well, next one's going to be at the library on the 15th of March.
Yes. Is that right?
Yes.
No, we've had the 15th of March.
No, 15th of May. The next one's up on the 15th of May.
All right.
So I don't know if you're going to be there twiddling the knobs.
I'm not quite sure. I haven't been asked yet.
Well, I strongly suspect you will be.
All right.
So I suppose it's kind of apt that we're going out with Barry Manilow.
Oh, Barry Manilow, look, this man is a genius, as is Elton John and Michael Jackson and a lot of other musical performers out there. I class them all as geniuses. I love Barry's work. This is a track from 1978, so look, it holds its own today, and it's just one of my favourites.
Well, thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thank you, it's been a pleasure.
Colin Kreitzer.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.